Hi, everybody. Ben Starr here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today in the studio, I want to welcome back Dr. Will Winter, who we had a little while back, towards the end of April, told us a little bit about fear. And we thought today it would be great to have Dr. Winter back and talk about the antidote to fear, or at least the flip side of fear, which would be trust. Because when you think about it, without trust, well, the absence of trust could be described as fear, or the absence of fear could be described as trust. So welcome back, Dr. Will Winter, to The Positive Mind.
Great to have you. Thank you. And Kevin's here too. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Dr. Winter. Nice to see you again. I guess what's different between fear and trust must have something to do with the future.
Yes.
I mean, you trust in tomorrow. I have fear today, but I have trust tomorrow.
So, Ben, I wanted to say something about what you just said, and then I want to answer Kevin. First thing is actually the opposite of fear is no fear.
Yeah.
Okay.
The opposite of trust is no trust. It's just that the brain doesn't do well with a vacuum. And so,
what do you mean by that?
The second you don't have fear, you're going to replace it with trust.
Okay.
The second you don't have trust, you're going to replace it with fear. This happens automatically. It happens in a flash.
Why doesn't the brain do well with a vacuum? What is it about our human...
I think it's a perception issue. We tend to... It's like when you see people, unfortunately, when there's dementia, they'll fill in what they believe is happening in the world around them automatically when it's just not the case. They're missing stuff and they're just filling it in. They don't realize they're missing it. The brain does this because it's used to doing it, I believe. But it does happen. It's just a fact that we tend to fill in the gaps. It's a perception thing. It's a processing thing.
And we also had a call when you were on about fear. A gentleman called in and he was asked, what is the nature of consciousness? And he said, a Nobel laureate said one answer, fear. So I think that the mind is naturally anxious,
yeah,
or afraid, and it looks for things to diminish and take away that fear. And certainly as a species, the only species with a kind of consciousness, we're always warding off danger.
That's right.
And we built our lives, our civilization, on protecting ourselves from danger.
That's right.
So I agree with you. I think it's a habit. I think it's a function of the mind to fill in whenever there's a chance of this sort of vacuum, this emptiness. So we can talk more about that as we go. But talk about trust as opposite of fear in the sense of the future. Because, you know, I have clients where I tell them, look, that's 2 months away.
Right.
Let's work with something you can heal now today. And we'll work on that also that you're afraid of that's going to happen in 2 months. We'll work on that also, but slowly. We can't be facing that right now. It's 2 months away.
Right.
So say something about trust as something in the future.
Okay, sure. So, basically it's like this. You have a relationship to something, and you need trust in that relationship. It could be the relationship to the chair that you're sitting on right now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you're going to believe in that chair. Why? Because you have experience from the past that when you sit on chairs, they support you. You don't fall down. You don't get hurt.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like gravity. We trust in gravity. We don't know necessarily, most of us don't know how it works or why, but we know that it does work. And so we trust in that relationship between us and the floor.
And trust is much more complicated and much more difficult than fear. Because fear is kind of a hardwired biological impulse.
Yeah.
Right?
So fear is natural.
On the show we did about fear, towards the end I was saying, you know, you mentioned that it's not all a bad thing. And I said, sure, if our ancestors didn't have a healthy fear of saber-toothed tigers, we might not be here.
That's right.
So fear comes naturally. Trust is something we have to work at. We have to cultivate. How can we do that? How can we create conditions that are more conducive to trust in our everyday lives?
So, do
you know the secret of life? I mean, that's a hard question.
Well,
but go ahead.
I'll give you an answer, please. Actually. And I don't know if you're going to like the answer, but it is an answer and it does work. And the answer is consistency. We trust in consistency. If something is consistently good, we trust, we believe that it will be good. If we have bad experiences with that from the past, we're going to trust that it will be bad, even if we're going to be incorrect. So
I was having a conversation with a friend last week about food and how when you find a restaurant that you really like and they make a dish that you really like, the impulse is to just keep going back to that same restaurant and ordering the same dish.
That's right.
Right? Because I do that. We know what to expect.
Well, yet, trust feels
on the,
good.
On the flip side, right? Yeah. Certainly here in New York, there are countless places to eat. I mean, you know, most of us, you know, eating out is a special thing, so it's something that we don't get to do that often. But when we do it, we want that guarantee. We want that trust that it's going to be what we're looking for. So I think that's where the impulse is, to go back to that same trusted restaurant where you know the wait staff and you feel comfortable and you love the specific dish.
Yes. Why do you get Coca-Cola? Because you know what you're going to get when you open up that can. Mm. And you could get that in Spain, and you could get it in Russia, and you could get it in New York. It's going to be Coke.
So why do people have a hard time trusting other people? I mean, we're talking about sitting in a chair, and trust feels good. I mean,
most people have more trust about the chair they're sitting in than about the person they're talking to.
Yes, and living with, and all sorts of other doing business with, and all sorts of other things, which is kind of what we're trying to figure out. How can we increase trust amongst individuals and people? Is it rooted in consistency?
Right, and what is a tipping point? How many times does somebody have to hurt you or disappoint your trust? Or basically, how many times do you have to feel betrayed? Basically, that's the word.
Yeah.
And if we talk about trust in its essential, most basic form, it's like, again, it's binary. It's all or nothing. So
you can't halfway trust? I mean, I feel the sense of halfway trusting people all the time.
That's right. So what happens is we sort of, again, it's hard to prove this, but I believe what happens is we sort of make a judgment call and we say, I trust enough and I'm just going to put my trust in this person. And sometimes it changes. And what happens is sometimes we, in a way, I guess, use a narrative to ourselves, and then we get very upset when we see that we were surprised or disappointed. Sometimes the motivation to trust somebody isn't the other person and their consistency. It's our want or need to trust that person, which is a totally different
situation.
It
is totally different. That's a total different thing.
Yeah.
So I think couples really should start with the idea of, what can I trust you not to do? I mean, the big thing in couples is, you know, you betrayed me by having a sexual relationship with somebody else. I mean, is that the biggest betrayal in the world? I mean, if you're basing your, you know, I mean, I think it's more than that. I think people need to have a basic understanding of, I want consistency in this area.
Right.
And when you violate that consistency, then it diminishes my trust for you.
That's right.
So I think couples would do well to start a conversation on, let's start small. What are certain things that I expect you to be consistent with me about? And then, you know, build. And then when we get to exclusivity and sexual exclusivity and that, then you have a background, you have a foundation of things that you trust each other on. I often think the requirement for sexual fidelity is a social norm more than a couple negotiated this aspect.
I've thought about this topic. I believe it's such a big deal. It's such a big betrayal because it tells somebody in a very immediate, strong way that you are not special to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not love you.
Right.
And that's so painful because up until that moment, you believed that your love was returned. You trusted that your love was returned. So somebody once, there's a quote, love is the feeling you have towards someone else. Trust is the knowledge that they feel the same way about you.
So if I love you, I trust that you love me back.
Ideally, yes.
Yeah.
Ideally, yes. Now, we're not talking about the chair loving you back. But you do feel comfortable with the chair. In fact, you want a comfortable chair to sit in. You don't want a bad, uncomfortable chair. So the idea of comfort and trust goes together. In fact, in a way, if you want to see it this way, trust isn't just it feels like a fact, but okay. It's really a belief. The truth is a fact. Trust is a feeling.
Yeah.
Two different things.
Sure.
It feels like it's the same, but it's not.
Yeah.
So, and like you said before, trust is a future component to it. Like, I will be safe in the future. I will be okay. I will be loved.
I can rely on my partner.
Yes.
I can rely 6 months from now that she'll or he'll be there.
Right.
That he will act a certain way when we're with other people that I can rely on.
Yes.
No, there aren't going to be a lot of surprises. It's, you know, in a way, you know, Ben's saying it's the opposite of fear. In a way, it's something that you can rely on, and fear is the absence of anything to rely on in
that
way.
That's right. In the last show I did with you guys, I talked about this idea of walking being controlled falling. I love to always go back to this because it's really what it's all about. When you walk, what you're doing is you're pushing yourself into the future. And as you're falling, which you always start to do, you start to say, uh-oh, what's going to happen? We're doomed. And then suddenly the second foot comes in and saves the day,
right.
Only to push you back into the future again, into another free fall, until, again, you save yourself. But what happens is, as you get used to walking, you don't even think about it anymore because you trust in the fact that this will be okay.
Mm.
And thankfully, for most of us, most of our lives, that is the case. So
if it were all so simple as walking, I mean, because we wake up with ourselves every day and people often say, I don't trust myself.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about this dynamic.
I don't trust myself. Right. So I was thinking
Does
about
that mean this. I'm not consistent enough with myself?
I think so.
But go ahead.
No. When you were saying about trusting somebody else, I was thinking the first thing you have to do is trust yourself. If you're in the habit of trusting yourself, if you're in the habit of loving yourself, which is very important, you're going to be able to do that with other people. And it's not going to be so much of a problem. And it seems that the people who don't trust themselves, and again, it may be specific to certain situations, but if you don't have faith in yourself, I know faith is a religious type of word, it really just means trust in the future.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have faith in yourself, how are you going to have faith in the relationship? How are you going to have faith in the people that you love? I mean, these are all sort of basic things we don't think about.
No, we don't.
But nonetheless, people function, and you assume people are functioning on your level, whatever that is. You know, there's this expression, how could you be hungry? I just ate.
Right. How could you be tired? I just woke up.
Yeah. So if you generally trust people, you're going to assume people are going to behave a certain way and that they'll trust you back. And then when something happens, you're like, wait, what? What happened?
Yeah.
It's a shocker.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you don't trust anybody, I don't know any very successful people who are living a constant state of fear and lack of trust. It seems that, especially, for example, within business, there's this idea of what they call, quote-unquote, healthy paranoia, which means take care of yourself, anticipate, you know, it's like hope for the best, plan for the worst.
Right.
So you cover yourself.
Yeah.
It's just a balanced way of dealing with that.
I mean,
if you're just joining us, you're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue, our guest, Dr. Will Winter, talking about trust. You may have heard him previously on The Positive Mind back in April. We did a show about fear. But, Dr. Winter, trust is such a fragile thing, right? And once shattered, it's so difficult to piece it back together. I mean, Kevin had used the example of a marital or sexual infidelity.
Right.
You know, I'm reminded of my father, who used to tell me all the time, growing up, about just doing the right thing and treating people well and being true to your word. He would tell me that a reputation is something that can take you a lifetime to build and a moment to destroy.
That's right.
Because that's based on trust. And as I said, trust is a fragile thing.
Right.
So what, I mean, and I know that you generally are, you know, in your practice, you deal mostly with children, but children have, you know, deep experience in dealing with fixing trust and rebuilding trust in situations where they feel betrayed.
Sure. So I also work plenty with adults, by the way. Children, you know, it's interesting. I feel like children are more resilient when it comes to trust and that type of thing. It's adults who, you know, we start remembering things. And I think adults, maybe there's something that has to do with after puberty, the brain changes in such a way that we're a little bit more standoffish. Mm. You know, it's a little bit like when you see the idea that dad comes home from work, ding dong, and then the kids like run to the front door. Mm. Hey, daddy, you know, and then after puberty, ding dong. And then someone's like, get the door. Your father's waiting. Right. It's like, yeah, what do you want, dad? Yeah. It's like it's more of like sounds like a bravado. It sounds like a tough guy thing. But really, what we're dealing with is more of a constriction, and fear is constrictive. Trust is expansive. You're comfortable with the world when you're trusting. Everyone wants trust. Everyone wants to not be scared.
Sure. And of course, it's easier said than done, because for the person who's experienced just a constant barrage of betrayals and disappointments and being hurt, it's very difficult to get to a place where, you know, they can say, I'm going to choose to trust.
Right.
Well, let's think about how valuable this is. I mean, how really rich an experience trusting somebody is. It's hard fought for. And so once it's achieved, it's shattering when it's gone. So
my question is this, is it really fought for, or do people give it for free?
I think internally, like if you're saying consistency, if you're depending on, well, that takes time. I need to see you in different circumstances that you're going to be consistent with me. But I'm saying internally, I think people, let's say you don't trust yourself, or if your level of trusting yourself is low, for you to actually trust another person is fought for. I mean, you dream and hope and wish and want somebody to be able to trust in spite of yourself, to get beyond yourself. And so when you actually get it, it's got to be shattering when it's taken away.
Yeah. You know, I think trust is an interesting process. I think what happens is we tend to, we have no choice, but we tend to start a relationship by giving a little bit for certain things. And then when we see a sense of consistency, then we open up a little bit more and a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And you may see this, Kevin, when you run groups, and you'll see how the group evolves. At the beginning, people aren't going to just, maybe some might, but generally speaking, the average person is not going to just share everything.
Sure.
They'll share a little bit, drip, drip, drip.
Yeah.
And then they get a sense with the consistency that they're safe and that they're safe and that they're, then they start opening up more.
Yeah.
And so,
I said fought for, you know,
fought for.
And you took issue with that. So.
Oh yeah. That's, I think it's both. It's that if you never give it for free, what if you meet somebody and let's say it's a dating situation, and right from the get-go, she says, oh, you have to earn my trust. Right away, if I were the guy in that situation, my radar would go up, and I'd say trust issues.
Of course, she has trust issues.
I would say,
demanding that from the start.
It's a demand. It's an ultimatum.
Yeah, of course.
It's a very low level of communication.
And it's the least thing you should do if you want somebody to trust you, is to demand it.
Yes.
You know, give them the freedom to choose to give it.
Yeah.
You know?
And by the way, I have a question. We're talking about trust. So what percentage of the world are liars?
I'd say a high percentage.
Yeah, take a guess.
Just my guess.
Take a guess. It's a math question. I'm a bit.
My guess, at least 49%.
So
I'm going to say it's a combination. We're all liars and we're all truth tellers.
Yes. So apparently, not only are we all liars, but we all lie every day. Now the question is, what are we lying about?
Right.
Wow.
And now, how do you trust people when you know that they're liars just like you are? This sounds cynical. I'm not trying to be cynical.
Well, how do we lie every day? What do you mean we lie every day?
Well, that's what the research shows. I didn't make it up.
Okay.
Let's say I say I'll be here at 12:30. Mm-hmm. If I'm not here at 12:30, that's a lie. You can't trust me anymore.
Uh-huh. Okay. So every time there's a violation of trust, there's a lie behind it. What if you say, but the subway was late?
Okay, so now I'm giving you a justification.
Right.
I'm asking for your permission to be excused for basically disappointing your trust.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, so
I mean, but
when you stop relying on
that's
somebody,
a benign type of lie. Yeah. There are other types of lies that are not benign. And the question is, by the way, when somebody lies, for whose benefit? You always want to ask that question.
Right.
For whose
benefit? You're lying for the benefit of the person that you're lying to, it's less, I think.
It may not be
dangerous.
A bad thing. In fact, it may be the right thing to do.
Less pathological.
It may be pro-social, not antisocial.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but most of the time when we teach kids, don't lie, now you're getting in trouble, you know, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, whatever it may be. Mm. Most kids and most adults, when they do lie, it's for their own selfish benefit. And in a way, the result is that they hurt somebody in the process.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it is an antisocial act.
But when your friend gives you a self-published book of poetry that they've been working on, and you know, you read it, and you're not really.
Oh,
moved.
I loved it. Oh, no, I really like
really
page
not
18.
You're moved by it, and you're really not into poetry, maybe, or you find it's uncompelling.
Yeah,
telling the straight truth might actually be hurtful to this person and might be damaging to the relationship.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
So in that case, maybe it's not so harmful to say, you know what, I really enjoyed it, and I really respect the work you're doing.
Right.
And I mean, look, it's not the worst thing in the world. Like the famous, you know, how does this dress make me look fat? That famous question.
Right.
Right. Right. Is it ever appropriate to
say? Of course, 99% of the time, you look great in that.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I cop to lying too, you know. But not necessarily for selfish reasons. This is a very broad. Maybe we'll have you back to talk about lying, because I think this is a very provocative and big subject. There are people out there who are saying, I never lie. I didn't lie at all yesterday.
Right.
And I'm not lying today. So I don't know what these guys are talking about.
Right. So some people are dishonest with themselves, and in so doing, they're lying to themselves.
Yeah.
And by the way, who do we lie the most to?
Well, the one you carry around with yourself most of the time.
All the time.
All the time. That's right. All the time. Talk about trust and sex, or trust in relationships.
Okay.
Trust as comfort, and comfort as being the enemy of the erotic.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, sex is a great topic. Let's go right to it, because people are interested for a good reason.
Yeah.
When somebody has an orgasm, what you're talking about is a complex situation neurologically.
Mm.
So you're talking about both the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous systems acting in that in their certain proper times.
Mm-hmm.
To then
you can't have one without the other. I mean, in sex, parasympathetic. Right. Just tell people parasympathetic.
Sure. Is relaxation. It's like the. What they call like the
for the heart to function, you know, isn't that parasympathetic nervous system is working, because you're not aware of it, but
parasympathetic is relaxation.
Okay.
You know, they say like fat and happy, and that's parasympathetic. Sympathetic is, you know, from anxiety.
Okay.
And so
often produced from the mind.
All of it.
So the body functioning, doing all of its work, that's the parasympathetic nervous system. We're breathing. We don't know it. We don't have to pay attention to it.
When you're asleep.
It's just doing it.
When you're asleep and you're not.
Yeah.
I can't say 100%.
Okay.
But generally speaking, when you're asleep and you're relaxed and your heart's beating 51 beats a minute, that's mainly parasympathetic is king.
So the sympathetic is when you have your worries and your thoughts and your concerns and your executive functions and all the things.
Adrenaline
having to do, and your awareness.
That's right.
Okay.
And
so
it's always a balance.
For sex to happen, you have to have both. The body obviously has to be able to function, but you also can't be in a state of doubt or suspicion or mistrust.
If let's say a guy is anxious, I'm going to get right to it. Sure. If a guy is anxious, he's not going to necessarily be able to have an orgasm. He may not even be able to get an erection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if he's worried, am I going to get erection? Well, then now he's stuck.
Of course.
Now he's got to get away from that whole thought and that whole, you know, construct. And if a woman wants to have an orgasm, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say, I don't know, I've asked this question. I don't know who's popular these days. I used to say Brad Pitt, but Justin Bieber, I don't know what to tell you.
Somebody out there.
Hot guy,
popular,
let's say.
Right.
Popular hot guy. And so let's say a woman is attracted at 10, at a scale from 1 to 10.
To 10, yeah.
But her comfort level, which back to trust, is zero or one or whatever, very too low. It's just too low. What's going to happen is she may get excited. She won't be able to have an orgasm because she needs to be relaxed at that moment to finally have that orgasm to allow that lack of control to occur.
So it sounds like trust is an aphrodisiac, or maybe
100% right.
Yeah, that's a great word.
Just a prerequisite for sexual pleasure.
100%. And yet, if it's only trust, if you're too comfortable, then it's a turnoff. Because trust is not erotic. Trust is not sexy. Trust alone. Trust, you just said it, it's an aphrodisiac, and I agree. But trust only is going to kill it. You need that sense of mystery. It's like, who's this mysterious guy?
Mm-hmm.
How come he didn't call me back so quick? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, some type of ungettability, some type of space that exists between the two that now you want to close.
Right.
Trust brings you together, which is great. You need that.
Right.
But trust only, without some type of question or some type of unfamiliarity or novelty, is just a turnoff.
This is the next piece in couples' work. One is the violation of trust, and the other is a loss of mystery.
That's right.
And so when we have couples who, you know, are trying to improve the relationship, we try to amp up the consistency so that trust can be restored, and we try to amp up the mystery. How can you keep your partner, this one you trust, mysterious?
That's right.
In a way. So exciting stuff. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Trust. An aphrodisiac. So trust itself.
Trust is an aphrodisiac. Now, let me tell you something.
It's like the strawberry with the chocolate or without the chocolate. You need the chocolate also. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Well, that's a Valentine's gift. Strawberries with chocolate.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. So, okay. So there are studies about this that people who look familiar are more attractive looking. If you're, you know, and then the other thing is, people that you trust are, you know, more attractive to you.
So people who look like you?
Not necessarily look like you, but look like what you're used to looking at.
Oh, okay. I got it.
In that role.
I got it.
So, you know, that you trust people, you know, you feel comfortable with what you feel comfortable with. You have to start, you see, what we generally have today on this topic of dating is people are not being introduced. They're doing it really in the blind. It's sort of like on dating apps, you don't know anything about the other person aside from very, very
a picture,
little.
That's all there is, a picture.
Yeah. A picture. Mm. So what do you trust in? So a lot of people don't get it. They're like, wait, I wrote to her and she didn't write back. Or I told him, I checked yes, and now he didn't write to me. There's so much lack of trust on both sides. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
And I believe that's, you need to start with trust. You need, with any relationship, if I don't trust this chair, I'm not going to sit on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a chair. And we're talking
about. So should you date people you're familiar with? I mean, or should you stretch yourself and date somebody of the opposite, a different race than you?
Well, my question is, do you want to date Norma Jean, the girl next door, or do you want Marilyn Monroe? I don't know. That's a question.
Yeah. Talk about mystery.
I mean, that's back to the mystery idea.
Sure.
So, you know, it's, and that's marketing and everything else. But do people go for the girl next door? Mm. Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like people want to, it's sort of like that Wizard of Oz thing. They want to have the adventure and then come back home.
Yeah. I think that's a
good. They don't want to just stay home the whole time.
Right.
So, you know, there's... Yeah, so there's a lot to it.
Yeah, we're going to take a short musical break. We'll be back after this to unpack all this business about trust as opposed to fear. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue, our guest, Dr. Will Winter. Again, we'll be back after this short musical break. Stay tuned. Funkadelic here on 99.5 FM WBAI. It's The Positive Mind. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue. Our guest today, who you may remember from back in April, Dr. Will Winner, who's talking to us about trust and the importance of trust. And we spoke a lot about how trust is fragile, how trust is kind of the opposite of fear, or how trust in the void of, in the vacuum. The brain does not like a vacuum. So in the absence of fear, we move towards trust.
And vice versa.
And how trust can even be an aphrodisiac. So, Dr. Winner, thanks for being back with us here on The Positive Mind. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Ben. And thank you, too, Kevin.
Thank you, Will. It's nice to have you. Let's talk about examples of trust.
Okay.
Like, how do people trust? We all trust every day the sun's going to come up.
Yeah.
So we're all working with layers of trust.
Right.
Many, many facets of our lives. Sometimes we take advantage or we take for granted our trust in certain things. Is trust, those things are physiological, like the sun coming up and the bus showing up on time, the subway on time.
Which it usually may not.
Yeah.
The subway's a whole different level. Right, the sun you could go to.
Say a few things about things that we can trust, that people are walking around trusting. You mentioned walking.
Yeah.
You know, your controlled falling, that we're trusting ourselves to catch ourselves before falling.
Right.
But it strikes me that there's plenty of things we're all every day trusting in. And do you trust your government?
Do you trust the group? So my question is, first of all, what is the relationship between the definition of trust and the definition of love? Because that's really also what we're talking about here. And do you love yourself? Do you trust yourself?
Do they have to have both? I mean,
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, if somebody loves themselves, they may trust in themselves because they're feeling pretty. Do I hear music in the background?
Just a little bit.
There's a little fade there. Ben is playing with his little fade there, which he loves to do.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, Love and Trust.
Pink Floyd. Okay.
Love and Trust. Yeah. I could see you loving yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily trusting. You know, we still get back to this trusting.
Okay.
Yourself.
So let's say it's like this. Let's say we take you and split you in half. Don't worry. I'm not
okay,
doing it.
Okay, no, I'm familiar with this experience.
So there's you now, and there's you in the future.
Okay.
Okay, so there's two of you.
Right.
Now, do you trust yourself to be good to yourself in the future? Are you going to take care of yourself for the future? Mm. Are you going to plan ahead? Are you going to save some money? Are you going to be okay in the future? If you love yourself, you're going to take care of yourself. If you know that you're going to take care of yourself, you could trust in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you think of somebody who's not trusting, it's useful to think, is love, you know, an issue here as well? Somewhere in the equation, is something missing love-wise?
Mm. Is that why I'm so sad for people who are hypervigilant? You know, here are people who don't experience self-trust, self-love. Their radar is always on. Their eyes are open. They mistrust the whole environment. And there are personalities like this. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
If you're an 8 in the Enneagram, you know, we talk about trust being betrayed is a huge issue.
Right.
And self-love is a hard thing for 8s.
Yeah.
It makes sense that if you're not trusting yourself, if you're vigilant all the time, that love can't penetrate you.
Right.
What do you say to people who have been betrayed and can't get past it?
That's a tough one. What they have to do is unlearn that lesson. You know, sometimes we learn good lessons, useful lessons. When I say good, I mean useful. Sometimes we learn lessons that are not only not useful, but that actually are working against us.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have to do is, A, recognize what this betrayal business is about. You could do some, you know, detective work, because lots of times there are hints even before.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
And why is it that you found that person attractive who on some level you must not have really fully trusted? You know, sort of like going after the bad boy or
right, whatever.
That, you know.
So I think what you're saying, we have to deconstruct betrayal.
Yeah.
And notice, when was the first sign? Where was the first sign? And forgive yourself for it.
Right. And of course, we see what we want to see. So the person may not be able to identify the first signs, but nonetheless, there's some reason they were motivated to find that person attractive.
Right.
And that's a little bit possibly beyond the show. We could probably have another show about it. But the question is, why did they have their role in that part of the what ended up being the betrayal?
Yeah.
Because you don't want the person to then find another guy or another
girl.
Right,
that's why I think it's important to take the time to see your role in the betrayal. Because if you're being betrayed, there's something you're doing. And certainly if you're serially betrayed, you're sending out the signal that I'm betrayable.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to blame victims.
No, of course not.
Because that's, I don't want to blame anybody.
Right.
I'm just looking for patterns.
In order to grow and learn and actually arrive at the ability to trust, certain people, many people, will need to see the signals they're sending out that enables them not to trust. It's sort of like a vicious circle. If you don't trust, it will lead to more not trusting. And more not trusting will lead to more not trusting. So it sounds to me like a very cyclical thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, as with all pathologies or with all off-the-spectrum sort of issues, it's an opportunity for the person to stop and look at, what am I doing? What's happening? Why is this continuing to happen all the time?
We all have these types of conversations with people. I was talking with somebody and she said to me, you know, I only meet, you know, jerks. I only meet these bad guys that are not trustworthy. And then it turned out that she was only giving herself a chance to be pursued by the guys that were very persistent types, like the very aggressive type of guy.
Mm-hmm. So now, she wouldn't have to do the work? Or
I think perhaps maybe there was an ego problem. Maybe she didn't feel good about herself and she needed that you know, ego sort of inflated by being chased.
Okay.
Sure. I'm not saying all chasers are betrayers, but I am saying that it was interesting that...
And it does line up with a certain type, personality type. Certainly.
Perhaps, yes,
sure.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, so, Armand used to talk to, you know, get phone calls on the show from women who would say the same thing. And he would often say, well, consider that there's one common denominator in all of those situations, right?
Right.
It's yourself. And whether this is a dating situation or a family situation,
it could be a business situation.
A business, exactly. If we find that we continually gravitate towards similar situations or we experience similar disappointments, betrayals, or letdowns, it's really incumbent upon us to look inward and see, you know, the role that we've played in those situations.
That's right. That's right.
So betrayal becomes an important part of this topic with trust. Talk about generations that are set up for betrayal. And, you know, we've had Panthea Sedapur on here a few times, and we're going to continue to have her on talking about the millennial generation and their difficulties, a lot of issues, a lot of betrayal of that generation.
Yeah.
You know, they thought they'd go to college and come out and have a good job.
Right.
You know, they were given a whole bunch of messages as kids that aren't proving to be true as they grow up.
Right.
So what can you tell us about your experience with millennials and this issue of trust? Millennials trust? Ben, you're a millennial. Do you trust?
I think it's a very skeptical generation on the whole.
Yeah.
I think it's a generation with a lot of fears.
You know, I wanted to, as we're talking about this, I wanted to say from a financial point of view, you mentioned college, university.
Yeah.
So you have kids who are suddenly in the negative financially, big time.
Yes.
You know, they go to NYU or wherever, and it's...
Talk about not relaxing. But go ahead.
No, they have 60 to 70 grand a year.
Right.
Flushed. I'm not saying flushed down the toilet, but it's spent.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have that loan, and then you have a grad school perhaps or whatever else. And now let's say you want to buy a house. Let's say you want to... You know, date. Where do you get the money? Where do you get the money to fall in love and have a family?
Well, speaking of trust and betrayal and fear, I think the millennial generation was brought up with a kind of a new notion in our culture, which I don't think was impressed upon earlier generations, but this kind of stressing that everyone needs to go to school. And by school, I mean college or university.
Right. Sure.
Is that everyone needs to get into the best college they can, study for 4 years, and they'll be fine. And by and large, millennials followed that advice, and that's what got them into the financial mess that you described with unprecedented student loans. And, you know, after doing that, many of these people have kind of wondered if they might have been better off learning a trade.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm. So there's that, and then there's the high cost of housing, which is insane.
Sure.
So it's sort of like it's like a 1-2 punch. So now you feel, as a millennial, I would imagine, a little bit, you know, shortchanged here.
Right.
And so that's one aspect of betrayal. But I think the more powerful aspect of betrayal that happens and the sense of lack of trust and anxiety, which seems to possibly be a lot more of an issue for millennials, people in their 20s these days compared to 20 people in their 20s years ago,
mm-hmm.
is interpersonal relationships. So let's say, because today everything is more texting and messaging and it's less phone calls, let's say you text somebody, they don't text you back.
Mm-hmm.
That's painful. That's like, wait, is this person my friend? I thought we were friends. Suddenly there's doubt.
Sure.
And do people really have friends? It's, you know, your connections are called friends on social media, some of those. But the question is, do you have the benefit of the not knowing in your heart that you have one or two real friends that you can trust? And I think probably less so for millennials because people are ghosting each other all the time. They're just, if the delay is an hour or a day or forever, it's painful. And you have to figure when somebody is, it's like a volley, when somebody's putting out a communication, you know who talks about this is John Gottman. He calls it the unmet bid for attention.
Yeah.
Kevin's a big fan.
Well, you know, I mean...
Who isn't a big fan?
He gives very concrete, specific things couples can do with each other to reinforce trust and get the magic back. So I'm glad you're quoting him. He's a great...
He's
given a great contribution to couples therapy and couples and conflict in general. So, bids for attention is a tangible one. Somebody is trying to repair the relationship and gives you a bid. They say something to you, and you know it's a prime opportunity to repair the relationship and confirm your commitment, and people are ghosting.
That's right. You know, this idea of love is a feeling you have towards another. Trust is the knowledge that they feel that way about you. What's the difference between hugging somebody and feeling hugged back? They're both very important. You can't really have a relationship where you imagine that. You can picture that. You're hugging somebody and they're like a cold fish.
Yeah.
That's not rewarding. That's not.
You almost don't want to.
You don't want to hug that person. Back. You're like, goodbye. Yeah. I don't want to deal with this. So this is very basic. And, you know, if you ask somebody, oh, how you doing? And even if they respond and they say, I'm okay, but they don't give you eye contact, that's not returning the bid for attention. So now let's bring it back to this texting idea. This is communication. When people aren't texting back, I think that's a huge problem. That's a huge weakener of relationships.
I agree. But it's so routine and so habitual, and people are on the receiving end themselves so often that they have to get past it. They get seduced into doing it to other people and aren't even aware of the injury that they're sending back.
That's right.
You know, by not responding.
Right. So, it becomes a culture of ghosting, essentially.
Right.
On some level of ghosting.
And so I think the question is, do you have a really good friend? You know, a friend you can count on who will always text you back, or forget the
even
phone.
Even if they, listen, if it's
emails.
A good friend, they don't need to text you back, that you know they're your friend.
There you go.
But that takes a lot of consistency in relationship.
Do you have friends away from social media? Do you have a friend that you go for, you know, whatever, without referring to your phone and looking at your phone and spending time with people without, you know, this access to being rejected over and over again? Because really, social media is really a systematic form of rejection.
It is. It's very interesting that you say it like that, and I 100% agree. Yeah, it's the other issue with social media is the individual communication attempt versus the broadcast. And so when you're broadcasting, generally out of 1,000 people, you'll get like 5 people responding in some way with a like or who knows what. That may be enough for a broadcast, but it's not really enough to feel loved and to feel connected and to feel like you have a friend. That's my personal opinion. And I think that's the root of the issue why millennials are not feeling confident. They're not feeling that they can, you know, trust in the future. There's a lot more anxiety. It's not an accident that we're seeing one with the other.
Right.
And I do believe it's a causal relationship.
Right. So do you have, for this, the millennial generation listening, do you have friends that you know are going to text you back or do something, reinforce something with consistency enough for you to establish a sense of trust with them?
Right. Now, by the way, I don't want to say that people have to text you back to be defined as a friend.
No, but are saying consistency.
I'm saying consistency.
And what is friendship without consistency and trust?
Right.
I mean, you know, then they're just drinking buddies, you know.
Right.
So, you know, there has to be a consider. You know, if you say, look, I'm not much of a texter and take that off the table, I'm consistent in other ways,
exactly.
then great. Then you have a friend. Then there's a basis there. So, no, we're not saying that just because you're being ghosted that, you know, you don't have any friends. We're saying, do you have people that you've established a consistency enough with to have them as a friend?
And what about this? Let's say you're talking to somebody and suddenly their phone or not even that their phone rings, that they just on their own look down and start, you know, handling their phone.
Right.
That breaks, you know, intimacy and connection.
A lot of problems. You call this generation the selfie generation. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's we never had selfies before. And a selfie is getting reinforcement for looking good. It's not necessarily getting reinforcement for being good. I think years ago, people got recognized more so for being good, for doing something.
Yeah.
Now it's, as long as I look good, I have a value. Because everything is visual, everything is, it's so, and by the way, probably we're going through a wave. I don't believe this will be.
It can't last. It's so superficial. There's just no way.
Maybe it'll last longer than you want it to, but I still think it'll be a wave.
I can't say it.
Yeah.
We have to get a substitute. But yeah, so looking good is temporary.
Yes.
Nobody looks good all
it's
the time.
It's an illusion. So do you want to trust in that?
Yeah. Yeah. Can you have some consistency in that? So why don't we close out talking a little bit about the connection between betrayal, love, and trust. I'm going to say those are our big words for today. Betrayal, sure. Trust, and love. And I don't know. I think you have to work at it. Do you? What do you think? Does it come natural? I mean, is this a natural?
Well, I think there are always going to be micro failures. So let's say,
good point. Yeah.
You know, there are going to be those moments.
You're going to miss each other.
Yeah.
Couples, people are going to miss each other. They're going to be micro failures.
Yeah, micro failures. And the question is, at what point is that something that's going to be too painful that you say, I didn't sign on for this, and you hit the eject button?
Right.
Because the truth is, nobody is perfect. And we're talking about, can you trust somebody else? Hey, what do we bring to the table? Are we so trustworthy? And maybe
that's
not.
That's a great reflection. I mean, you know, when you're wounded, it's often a question you should ask yourself, have I wounded people in the same way?
What happens is our whole universe becomes very small. It's like I have a paper cut. And suddenly, I don't care about starving children somewhere else in the world. I have a paper cut, and I can't get beyond that. My whole life, I'm in pain right now. And so if people are being hurt over and over and we're hurting each other, it's very hard to. But if we can, practice focusing outside of ourselves best we can in those moments. And yes, it is, I would say, because nobody's perfect, absolutely, it's all about work on both sides.
Yeah. But it doesn't have to be unpleasant work. There are rewards. There are consistent rewards.
If it were easy, wouldn't it be interesting?
Yeah.
I think.
Then maybe hard work keeps the mystery alive.
Effort, you have to put in the effort to make it meaningful to you. When I have with my dog, and I have a bone, if I give it to him, he looks at me like, what's this? But if I throw it across the room, then he runs for it, and then he chews on it for like 10 minutes because he's so excited that he got it. So there's something to be said for that effort and it being worth something after having expended effort.
Well, listen, thanks so much for being with us again. We're going to have you come back. These are big, big topics you've been talking about with us, fear and trust now today. We'll work up other topics. Will Winter, people can reach you at?
WillWinterMD.com or through, I guess, calling here.
Through here at the center, which is 212-757-4488.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. You've been listening to The Positive Mind. We're here every Tuesday and Wednesday, 99.5 FM from 1 to 2 p.m. And you can find us on the iTunes Store. That's a free podcast. Just look up The Positive Mind. And feel free to always send us an email, thepositivemind@wbai.org. Again, we're here Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1. We thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time.